I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
Picture this. You're halfway through a DIY Carfix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realize you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything. Brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need. And it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need, at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit, every time. eBay. Things, people, love.
Hello everyone, and welcome to F1 Explains, the official Formula One podcast that lives and breathes to answer your questions about Formula One. You send them to us. F1explains@f1.com is the email address. Send words, send voice notes. Please keep sending your questions, by the way, and you're doing a fantastic job so far this season, but this show becomes considerably more difficult to make if you don't send us your questions. So far, so good. You're all doing wonderfully. Thank you. And occasionally during the season, we like to do a little bit of a quick fire special where we get two esteemed guests of the paddock and put some of the, let's say, smaller in terms of not stature or importance, but more bite-sized questions, and we do a few of them in an episode. And when I introduce you to an iconic duo, boy do I have an iconic duo with me here. There are iconic duos, and then there are iconic duos. This, my friends, is an iconic duo to start with. F1 TV main presenter Laura Winter. Laura, welcome. It's lovely to have you here.
What an intro. Thank you very much for having me.
We don't do intros by halves on F1 Explained.
I love it.
IndyCar race winner and F1 TV experts, Mr. James Hinchcliffe, for a debut on F1 Explained. What a joy it is to have you here.
I love this show already. That was the nicest intro I think I've ever had. I'm in. I'll come back anytime.
Oh, well, you're already booked. Even if you're truly awful on this episode, you're already booked. Already rebooked. And we are sat in the F1 paddock in the lovely F1 hospitality bit where, you know, people come and have a nice coffee who are being looked after by F1. I'm not sure how I'm allowed in here. It must be some sort of administrational error. It is quite windy outside, and it does sound quite windy. So if you hear at any point during the episode and you think, is the building there in about to fall down? It's not. It just sounds like...
It might
like,
be.
We don't know that. Are you an architect? Because I'm not sure.
My ex was an architect. So I have some qualifications.
God, okay, all right. Yeah. You know more than we do. Yeah, so if you're comfortable,
how do you have qualifications if your ex was an architect?
We'll move on, Laura. Thank you.
Osmosis.
You're here to answer the questions, not ask them. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I remember my place.
That's how this works. It all looks fine to me. It's structurally sound, so I think we'll carry on. Hinch, ready for your debut? Ready to answer some listener questions?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go.
Excellent. Well, with that in mind, the first question is for Laura. San from the Netherlands says, my question is how to become an F1 presenter like Laura Winter. You can tell it's not just thrown together this show, can't you? Thank you for reading this question, and hopefully you can answer it. San, not only can we read it and answer it, we can put it to actual real-life Laura Winter.
Thank you very much, Sam. That's very kind. I think one of the things in that question that stands out is, how do I become an F1 presenter? And there is no training program to be an F1 presenter. So you become a trained journalist, broadcast journalist, sports presenter, sports broadcaster first. And I think that's something I really want to put across to anyone listening who does want to become a presenter, to broadcast, to be in this paddock, in media, is that you have to put the craft and the skill of what you want to do first, not the desired outcome. We all have dreams of where we want to be, but unless you have the processes in place to ensure that you are doing all the work necessary to get to where you want to get to, you won't get there. You know, a goal is an arbitrary statement in the sky. So I think how to be a presenter is the question here that I really want to answer. And then if you become a really good presenter, the end goal will take care of itself by virtue of you being really good at what you do and rising to the top of the motorsport world. Of course, having a passion in motorsport is really important, and having a niche that you want to specify in is great, but starting as broad as you can and getting as much experience as you can, whether that's in student television or radio, whether that's in local television or radio, local sports, motorsport series within the nation, the Netherlands that you're in, getting all the experience there at a grassroots level and then building up and up and up, I think is a really crucial point. But there's no such thing as training to be an F1 presenter, in a sense. You train and you have to work towards being the very best journalist, broadcaster that you can possibly be. And then by virtue of being excellent, you will probably find yourself at the very top of it all.
Can I ask a follow-up question to that? Because I think this is an interesting one for people. Were you a fan of Formula One before you worked there?
Not particularly.
I think that's an important thing for people to realize.
I almost don't want to admit it because there are so many people out there who'd be dying to get into the paddock who have been fans from day dot since they were born. They've loved motorsport and wanted to be in the paddock. I was a huge fan of sport, and then I was a huge fan of and wanted to be the very best broadcaster that I could be. And so those two things came for me absolute first and foremost. When I then got a shot at motorsport, it was kind of random, but I took it. And because I had a wide knowledge base and wide experience of sport and broadcasting at that point, I took to motorsport far more easily and quickly than perhaps I should have done with very limited experience in the sport. And then built my way up in the paddock. But you build up with a foundation of excellent broadcasting, excellent journalism, training, and a vast amount of experience in a load of different sports.
But also, I think any sport, like I grew up as an F1 fan. I grew up as a passionate F1 fan, watching it from when I was 7-8 years of age. But that's not to say that everyone who stands in the F1 paddock should be a Formula One geek from a young age like me, because you need fresh perspectives, you need fresh ideas, you need people to ask those questions that perhaps someone like me who's been watching it 15-20 years wouldn't necessarily ask. I think so important. So no, I think there's, you know, you can be a fan of a sport in any way you want to be a fan of a sport, and it's brilliant if people have discovered it later on, people have discovered it from an early age, either's fine. Laura, F1 is a better place having you here.
Well, and I have to say, I am now the biggest fan of this sport in the terms of I love my job, and I get up every single weekend, no matter the time, I get up and watch the race, qualifying. I fully embrace even when I'm not here at track. So very much become a huge fan. But I think it's important to note that to do the job, you can't actually be a fan. You've got to be neutral in how you present. You can't have biases. You can be passionate for the sport and want to tell the brilliant stories of the sport, but you have to do that in a measured way, and having a bit of distance to that has probably helped me in some way.
You do have some favourites though, don't you? Not in terms of drivers.
Go on.
But when we were talking just before we came on air, Laura was telling us how she's a huge, and won't hear anything said against her, Taylor Swift fan.
Oh God, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Taylor Swift, if you're listening to F1 Explains, which surely she is.
Oh, really? I hope she does. Yeah. Taylor, send any questions, F1explains@F1.com.
We would love to host you here at F1. We'd love to have you here in the F1 hospitality. Please do come and visit.
Bring Trav.
And please come on the F1 TV post-race show.
Not pre-race show. You wouldn't be welcome on that, though. Right. Let's move on and talk about some cars, shall we? Lauren has been in touch. Lauren, thank you for your question. She says, what is slipstream and how does it benefit drivers? I should say, what is a slipstream? James Hinchcliffe, you've driven many a car.
Do you want to take this one?
You may been be in many slightly a better placed.
Yes.
Well, Laura, I'm sure Laura would be able to answer, but James, unfortunately, Laura did the last one, so you're up.
Fair, because I really wanted to take how to beat Laura Winter, but that's fine. Well, it's a great question. So a slipstream, or a tow, as it's kind of sometimes referred to, is essentially the disturbance in the air that a car makes. So the best analogy is when a boat goes through a very smooth, calm lake, right? You see the wake behind the boat. Well, water and air, fluid dynamics are very similar between the two. So that same sort of philosophy, that wake exists in air when a car goes through it. And what that does is it pushes some of the air away, it breaks it up, and it makes the air resistance immediately behind behind that car less. So the car that's running behind in the slipstream or in the tow has less aerodynamic resistance against it, less drag, we call it. So you can get more straight line speed. So that's why when a car's tucked up behind another car in a draft, in a tow, in a slipstream, many, many different names for it, it accelerates faster and can get a higher top speed. It's because there's less air resistance against the front of the car.
One of the most frequently asked questions I get, James, is when that goes from being a slipstream that's helpful when you're behind another car to dirty air, which we often hear in commentary, commentators, co-commentators say, oh, they're stuck in the dirty air. So how does being behind a car go from being a good thing in a slipstream to a bad thing with dirty air?
That's a great, great question. You're right. We probably don't explain that enough.
That's what we're here for.
It's a very simple, that is in the title.
does what it says on the tin.
It's very simple. If you're going in a straight line, it's good. As soon as you get to a corner, it's bad. Because in the corner, you need the downforce. So there's this trade-off between downforce and drag. So the more downforce you have, the more drag you have. The less drag you have, the less downforce. So in a straight line, you want as little drag as possible, because that means more top speed. In the corner, you want as much downforce as possible. So the dirty air or the slipstream takes away drag, which by definition also takes away downforce. So it's good in a straight line, bad in the corners.
I can't remember the Formula One driver that said it to me. I think it was Alex Albon. He absolutely won't be listening to this, so he's not going to correct me if it wasn't. So let's say it was. Alex once said to me, it feels like turbulence in an aeroplane, which is an analogy I really liked. Is it an accurate one from Alex?
Very, very accurate. If you're going through nice, clean air in a plane, it's running smooth, everything's stable, you hit a bit of turbulence, the plane feels like this. That's what the car feels like cornering in dirty air.
Yeah, and it's also, when they go through dirty air, they do spill their little cup of coffee that they have on the dashboard in Formula One cars, like in a plane as well.
Right,
yeah.
Yes.
That's what Alex Albon said to me, he did. Fiona is in the UK, and this is another media-y one. Fiona says, we've had this a lot on F1 Explained in the last couple of years. I've seen this question a lot. It's a really good one, and we've not ever got around to it until now. I would be interested to hear about the media people that go around with the drivers. What specifically is their role? Are they just recording what they say, or are they also in charge of getting them to different places on time and they're scheduled? Do they ever have to reprimand / tell them off for saying anything, or have to tell them not to talk about certain information? Now, I think what Fiona means here, Laura, is quite often, say you're in the pen, for those that don't know, that's the bit where the drivers come after a session to be interviewed and talk about the session, speak to someone like yourself or Lawrence Barreto. They often have someone stood next to them with a little dinky recorder that looks like it should be off the 1990s but are still used. That's the person we're talking about here, Laura, isn't it?
Yeah, the media or press officers that accompany the drivers and pretty much tail them wherever they go. They're fundamentally almost like babysitter, as well as a media officer, as well as a mum or a dad, as well. They have a multitude of roles, and they're fundamentally, yes, they are there to record everything the drivers are saying to ensure that nothing is misquoted or misheard or speculated about. They have the exact recording of exactly
so the
all the interviews.
The teams have got access to the interview that they've done, which they might not have if, say, it's an interview for Sky Sports or F1 TV.
Exactly, absolutely. So they will have those interviews recorded, but they will also be in charge completely of the driver's schedule for that day, and it will be blow by blow of exactly, I mean, to the minute. You know what it's like in the garages, to the minute of what a driver is doing, where they are going. They walk around with the drinks bottle. I mean, they do a whole manner of roles within that one sort of image that you have of them. They will also be charged of any partnerships, opportunities they've had, marketing within the team, fan zone appearances on the stage. They are there to make sure that the driver is looked after at all times. And I'd imagine maybe not reprimanded for things they say. They're certainly briefing drivers about what to say. They will have a press briefing in the mornings ahead of media day, and they will tell them, this is what we want, how we want the team to be represented here, this is how we want you to explain this, and they'll make sure that the driver is on the same page and aligned with what the team wants. And while they certainly don't reprimand them per se, they will nag them, put on your cap, get your sponsor out. They will make sure that the drivers are towing the line, for sure.
I've also heard a big part of that job is being almost a big plane going over us here in the paddock. I wonder what, that's a big plane. Is it a Is it a plane or the end of the world?
It's either a big plane or a very small plane going very quickly.
Yeah, or too close to us. Anyway, hey, maybe the thing that will bring the podcast to an end isn't the thing falling down. It's just being blown away by a plane.
It's the apocalypse.
Yeah. Anyway, if you're still here, the world's still going. Those press officers are often on the BDI lookouts for Drive to Survive because that long microphone boom arm hears everything. Like, Drive to Survive, around, don't swear, please. Mm-hmm. Best behaviour, thank you very much. There is one of
I don't think any of them got that memo because I'm pretty sure they all swear clearly on not. Drive to Survive.
Clearly not. Now, some of these press officers I've become friends with, I'm fortunate enough to
they're
say they
amazing
are.
Amazing people. They
wonderful
are.
Wonderful people. You've took the words
best.
Out of my mouth. Some of them you would not argue with. They're used to bossing Formula One drivers around. Ooh. Some of them, and they are not afraid to boss those Formula One drivers around. They are really not. Some of them are quite terrifying. One, should I name her or not? Laura, you tell me. One has her own fan account.
Go on, I think, yeah, we can give her a name check.
Sophie Ogg from McLaren has reached such a level of stardom in Formula One that she has her own fan account.
And I've worked... with
I thought you could say I follow it. No, I started it.
Oh, I mean, member 001 of the fan club. No, I've seen her wrath. I know that as a driver, you don't want to cross her. The press officer for Haas was an old press guy of mine.
Stu
Morrison. You do not want to cross him. Like, yeah. This is a powerful position.
Yeah. Scottish man.
And he's Scottish Canadian.
Scottish Canadian.
What a mix!
It's a volatile mix. He can chop down a tree in no time.
Hi,
he loves
Stu.
Flannel. Anything plaid.
Chop down a tree.
Yeah.
They are the loveliest people, though. And if you ever need a coffee or a pick-me-up or a hug, they're there. They are fantastic human beings, and they work so, so hard.
And from the media side, I mean, it's a great asset for us to have those good relationships, because if we need that 5 minutes with a driver or maybe five more minutes with a driver that we've already, you know, gotten over on it, they're the gatekeeper. Because, like you say, they make the schedules for the drivers, so they are really in charge of what those drivers are doing.
And you mentioned look after. Hello to Rebecca Banks at Williams, who once at the Miami Grand Prix, after I'd been pit lane reporting, and the track had been relayed, so it was incredibly dusty and it was incredibly hot. I came back into the paddock looking sweaty, both sunburnt and pale from the dust and filthy. And Bex just took one look at me and went, Christian, I'm going to get you a hat. And for the rest of the weekend, I had been given water and a hat, as she truly did look after me.
And I've worked under her as well. Another one you don't want to cross.
Oh, so they've got boss.
They are the nicest people, but they can be the most fierce if you cross them.
And that's the perfect point to have a break. Back in a moment on F1 Explains.
I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service. It's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Now, just before we continue with F1 Explains, we've got a chance for you to win an incredible F1 Partner Prize bundle this Easter, thanks to the lovely people of F1 Unlocked. Now, the amazing prizes on offer include a £100 voucher for the official F1 store, a Miami Grand Prix 2025 poster, a Puma F1 racing jacket, a Hot Wheels F1 diecast bundle, and a Lego F1 collection bundle. I'm very jealous. You do not want to miss out on those exciting prizes. So to enter, go to f1.com/Easter-unlocked-podcast. That's, we got a pen, f1.com/Easter-unlocked-podcast. We'll also put the link in the description for this episode. Might be easier. Now, search the pages on that site and go on a hunt to find all the hidden clues for your chance to win that incredible F1 Partner Prize bundle. Full terms and conditions are on that page too, and you wouldn't want to miss those. Entries close on Tuesday, the 22nd of April. Good luck. Welcome back to F1 Explains. We are with F1 TV presenter Laura Winter and ex-IndyCar driver and race winner James Hinchcliffe in the F1 paddock, answering some of your quickfire questions. I felt like we covered an awful lot in the first half. We went through a variety of different subjects.
It's almost like you've got two main character presenters on. Who like to
chat.
Yeah,
putting us together might have been
the iconic duo. Perhaps was a
big main character energy going on. No regrets on the duo here. Let's get on to another question. Renton from Long Island, New York says, Renton. Wow. We keep saying about the wind.
Yeah.
We need to keep this podcast going because otherwise I'm not quite sure we're going to get to the end. Renton, we're going to battle through and give you your question. Renton says, I've been an F1 fan since I was a kid. I recently started listening to F1 Explains this year and it's really increased my knowledge of the sport. Renton, you're our favourite. You have been awarded gold listener status. I always notice how calm the drivers appear to be when the car is out of control and about to have a crash. I'd like to know from a driver, Hinch, you're up. Number one, what their feelings and thoughts are just before a crash as they are crashing. And two, how they are able to get past that and race again, sometimes just the following week. I find this fascinating because when you're driving a road car, you're so cautious and scared of a major crash. But racing drivers just seem so calm. Even when their cars go flying. Hinch, this is a great question, isn't it?
It is. I'm going to answer it. I do have 10 laps. 10 laps in an F4 car experience. I did go...
Did you crash?
I went... No, I didn't crash. Oh, I was alone on track. I did go quite deep into turn one at one point. I had a chronic circuit, understeer, Bahrain. Did think, am I heading off into the runoff here? I didn't because I was going at about 30 kilometres an hour. But I probably also wasn't calm in that moment either. That's about the extent of my experience.
Well, you know,
perhaps I've, over to the driver.
I've definitely had more experience crashing than that.
You have.
I've hit things at like 350 kilometers an hour. So it's an interesting question. I'm gonna argue a little bit that drivers are always calm on the radio right beforehand because sometimes when the car's not handling well, drivers can be quite animated on the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the moment of an actual crash happening, the more experience you have with something, the better you're going to be at handling it. By the time you've gotten to Formula One, you've crashed a lot of stuff. It's just part and parcel. It comes with the territory, from go-karts to the junior categories. You've had your fair share of accidents because you have to push a car to its limits and sometimes beyond to find that limit, right? So normally, when you've reached that moment, and there is a moment where you know the thing is unsavable and you are having an accident, whether you like it or not, it's not fear. It's usually anger and frustration. You're mad at yourself for making a mistake. You're mad at somebody else if they tipped you into a spin or instigated the accident. You don't even have time to be scared or worried about your own safety. You're just so angry and focused on the fact that you're losing track time, you're losing laps, whatever, if it's in the practice or you're out of the race, if it's the race. And how do you get by it? You're used to it. It's reps. Like I said, you get out of the car, you dust yourself off. Modern racing is so safe compared to how it used to be. Even just 20, 30 years ago, drivers for the most part are able to pop off the steering wheel, unbuckle the belts, hop off and go do it again.
But it is that mental strength, isn't it? You guys have to be able to dust yourself down, get back on it and sort of put it behind you.
I've always joked, and it's not really a joke, that I think drivers lack the self-preservation gene that most human beings are born with. Or else you wouldn't strap yourself into a ground-based rocket and do what we do.
It's a mad thing to do on the face of
it. It's absolutely insane, absolutely. And then you do have an accident, and for some people, that's enough to scare them off. But those people, they get weeded out way, way early in the journey of becoming a professional racing driver. And so by this point, again, everyone here has crashed plenty. have all proven that they don't care about themselves, and so you just strap back into the next car and go.
Laurel, you are often waiting to interview a Formula One driver shortly after they've had a crash. That must be a tricky part of the job.
Yeah, it can be. You've just got to be really sympathetic in that moment. And just, I think, first and foremost, are they physically okay? How are you is the first question to ask. Because driver safety and the driver being physically unharmed is the most important thing. Forget not making Q3, forget not getting it on pole, forget crashing out of a race. And, you know, that's the first and foremost biggest priority is, are they okay? And then just letting them talk through what happened in their own words. Take us into the cockpit. Don't kind of put words into their mouth of what you think may have happened. We are not on the track, in the car. They know best.
This next one is from a listener called James. James, was this you sending in a question before you came on?
Can you confirm or deny?
No, okay. Well, I might put it to you because that would make it entirely pointless. But still, James says, this is a cracker. What is the point of the small windscreens on F1 cars? And James has put windscreens in inverted commas, making out that he's not quite sure if they are windscreens. They're sometimes in like a shark tooth pattern, a little lip that sits just in front of the steering wheel that goes around the cockpit. What's the point if they are so, James uses lots of O's, small? Now, Hinch, you raced with a full windscreen in IndyCar called the Aero Screen. F1 did test with these a while ago, but decided to go for the halo protection that you see around modern F1 cars instead. So, two questions for you, Hinch. What is the point on those tiny little things? And B, what is the difference when you are racing sort of open wheel to windscreen?
So, the two are actually kind of intertwined. Those little screens, windscreen if you want to call it, it is kind of that. It's actually, like anything on a Formula One car, everything is designed with aerodynamics top of mind. So the reason they have these weird shapes is they've spent hours in a wind tunnel trying to figure out what shape of that little lip can affect the airflow around the driver's head. As you can imagine, a head, not super aerodynamic. And so if you can manipulate the air before it even gets to the driver's head, it can kind of just help with the whole airflow down the car. It can help with the buffeting as well. Because you think about it, your head's exposed, 200 mile an hour wind, your head can move around quite a bit. That's why all the little lips on the helmet are designed for, to kind of help keep the driver's head stable. The way the air flows off of that windscreen is also affected by that. So it's partly due to buffeting, and it's partially due to just trying to control the airflow around the driver's head. Conversely, in an Indy car, you have that full aero screen, and it is so different because when you drive an open wheel car without that, yes, the engines are very loud, right? But you'd be amazed at how much the wind noise really comes into it because, you know, 200 mile an hour wind is
it's a fair wind.
We're hearing this wind, and yeah, that's, you know, considerably
that's worse, I believe, according to the Met Office. It's a lie.
So when you put the aero screen on, that wind noise disappears, and so you're hearing the engine a lot more. Your head's not buffeting at all. It's a different force on the head, on the helmet. So it is a very different experience.
And boy, have we got some wind here.
We could use a little aero screen right now, or a little windscreen.
And you mentioned about the driver's heads. I feel like we're one step away from that in Formula One, aren't we? Where a designer, an aerodynamicist, Adrian Newey type goes, and can we remove the driver's head, do we think? And they goes, no, we can't, Adrian. No, that's taking it too far.
You put an aero screen, he would probably love an aero screen because he could manipulate that however he wanted.
The drivers need those, Adrian, for goodness sake. Right, let's get to Kath. She asks, in qualifying, if a driver does more than one lap, which is the lap that counts? The fastest lap or their final lap? Laura Winter.
Well, it's the fastest lap.
It is the fastest lap
overall. Sure. I thought that was a quiz. Yes.
It is a bit of a quiz question, isn't it?
It's the fastest lap overall. So let's say they do two runs through Q3, for example. They go fastest on that run one, then the track doesn't develop or they hit traffic or they make a mistake on their second run. That doesn't matter. They've set that time on the first run. Famously, Max Verstappen is very, very good at getting that banker lap in and making it the one that counts. That's the lap. Whichever order it comes in is the fastest.
And it sometimes, very rarely, but it sometimes does lead to a little bit of an anticlimax in qualifying. I remember the Chinese Grand Prix qualifying of this year. In the final part of qualifying, we've got a provisional grid and we're all ready and raring for them to set their final runs. And actually, nobody improved. And it was, I think one of the top 10 improved. But actually it was like, oh, right, as we are. Okay.
Yeah.
And that was Oscar on pole. And it was like
so,
that.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't follow the script that we all want to write of qualifying, where you get that moment over the line and Jakesy goes 11 out of 10 because we've got someone on pole and snatching the end of the death. But that's Formula One. It's just the fastest time whenever it happens.
That is sport. That is Formula One. That's why we love it. Now, before we let you guys go, there was a question earlier from a listener called Christian, and I said it wasn't me. This one very much is me, and I wanted to put it to James Hinchcliffe based on something I have heard from the aforementioned Alex Jakes, F1 commentator. I was listening to a recent practice session, and he threw down to you in the pit lane, James Hinchcliffe. And he said, you're a man of many talents, undoubtedly true. But one of those talents he listed was excellent dancer.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Expand, I hadn't heard this before.
You don't know this?
I didn't know this.
Laura, please, take it away.
No, go on.
No, it's all you.
Stand up and do it, go on.
One of you is contractually obliged to answer the questions while you're both there. Go on, Hinch, I'm going to have to push you on this. I don't want to go journalist on you, but I will.
There was a time, Christian, long, long ago, when I participated in a reality television
Dancing
competition
with the stars.
Show. Yes.
Dancing with
strictly,
the Stars.
Was it Strictly Come
know
Dancing?
No, this. I've entirely forgotten, but so UK listeners, Strictly Come Dancing, global listeners, Dancing with the Stars, massive format. And Hinch, you were a contestant, weren't
you? I was, back in 2016. So it was a long time ago, and I don't dance anymore, and Alex knows that, but he likes to remind people.
You do dance. That. You still dance.
Not like I used
you
to.
You were shimmying your way up here.
We were, weren't we? It's like in show tunes.
It was one of the first facts co-presenter of this podcast, Katie Osborne, is not with us this weekend, said to me, when I was about to meet you for the first time, you know, Hinch was on Dancing with the Stars. So Katie, I apologise. I'd forgotten that fact. Where did you come?
Second.
Oh,
first loser.
Absolutely not. That is an outstanding result.
For a guy that sits for a living, I was pretty pleased with that, yeah.
Would you go on Strictly Come Dancing?
Oh, yes. That was the Halloween dance. I was Joker. She was Harley Quinn.
Wow.
Just say what you say a little bit here.
Okay, so... Oh, yeah, it's not television. It's audio. Okay, so what I'm seeing is... So it's the Suicide Squad vibe, which I actually haven't seen. Sorry. So James Hinchcliffe is dressed as like a Halloween-style Joker. He's got green hair, a completely pale, translucent white face.
No, that's my normal face.
No, it's not. I knew that. I was trying to find the best way to say that. Okay, then you need to see the sun. big red, wide lips. Mm. And his dance partner is dressed as kind of like, what's her name? Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's not my knowledge base, this.
All that truly matters is, you know, this is Tom Bergeron, who's the host at the time. And all that truly matters is this is just shortly before we got perfect tens for that.
Ten.
So it's just saying, no big deal.
It's perfect.
And I would like to give this debut pairing on F1 Explains a perfect 10.
Aww.
It has been a joy to have you here.
Thank you very much.
And if you're looking to catch up on any of the F1 action from this weekend, of course, F1 TV is the place to do it with Laura and the gang. If you'd like to come to a race in person, where you sadly get to see a bit less F1 TV because you're here, but for, you know, one or two weekends only, it's worth it, isn't it,
Laura? Well, sometimes you're on the big screens.
Sometimes.
So if you come to a race where, you know, we're big in your nation, then we may well be on the big screens and you get all of it at once.
All of it at once. Tickets.
Arguably too much.
Yeah. Okay. You will be sick of us.
Never too much. Tickets.formula1.com is the place for that. And speaking of Nation, the F1 Nation podcast reviews and debriefs races, now regularly featuring Laura Winter as well with...
I know!
With Uncle Tom Clarkson.
This is really nice. Oh, he is like an Uncle Tom Clarkson.
He's like a friendly Uncle Tom Clarkson.
Yeah, he's so nice. It's a real treat to be on that podcast. Loving it. So thanks for having me on this one and that one.
I only need to tick off Beyond the Grid, and you've done the hat-trick, Laura.
Yeah. How do I get on Beyond the Grid?
Speak to producer Chris after the show. I'll hook you up.
I have done 10 laps in F4 machinery.
You know, they've had
worse guests. Beyond the grid. Yeah. Beyond the Bahrain grid.
You've been in the front seat for a few hot laps with me as well.
Yeah. Yeah, add it to the CV.
Yeah, you nearly threw up after one of them.
Oh, my days, that was bad.
Listen, yeah. You've at least half booked. Producer Chris is looking at me with a diary, I can tell you. Here on F1 Explains, we've got new episodes every Friday. We'd love you to keep sending your questions, please. F1explains@f1.com. Send them as an email, send them as a voice note. Please do like and subscribe and leave us a nice message, a nice review. And we'll be back this time next week with another F1 Explains. Laura, James, this has been a pleasure. Thank you. We're going to get out of this building now before it blows away. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.